Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Dance Monkey Dance. I'm Chris.
I'm John.
How you doing, John?
Oh, you know, trying to survive.
Yeah.
One day at a time, being careful what I put online.
Yeah.
Waiting for ICE to come take my neighbor away.
Well, I mean, you just have to be careful if you're going to leave the country and then come back and, you know, of what's on your phone. Because if you have any memes of anybody politically, then they can not let you in.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
It's so weird. Remember when America this was about free speech?
What's that?
Yeah, exactly.
Where a senator, her husband, and their dog are executed, and not one major news outlet is saying anything about it.
Well, and also, you know, the White House hasn't said anything about it either. You would think,
of course not, because he had to get to the golf course.
You would think that at least there'd be some kind of statement like saying, you know, political assassination is wrong or something. But that's not the world we live in anymore. Weirdly. Definitely not the America that I grew up in.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't exist anymore.
No.
Does not exist.
Nope.
But, yeah, there you go. And that's it for this week, folks.
I mean, I think my colonoscopy was more fun than, you know, current news events.
Yeah.
Now that I'm old enough to get regular colonoscopies.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Although I will say, so I had a colonoscopy a couple of weeks ago. And I will say, of all the things that I've had done to me, it's probably the least I've ever, like, I shouldn't say, well, I don't even know how to put this. Like, of all the things that I've had done medically, like, that is the one that, not that I enjoyed the most, but was the easiest to go through, I guess. Besides the prep day where they make you drink a bunch of horrible shit and you wind up on the toilet for a couple hours. You know,
but you didn't have popsicles.
Yeah. The actual procedure is probably the easiest because you just go to sleep and then you wake up. You know, when I was getting prepped, they put the thing in your hand so that they could give you the anesthesia and stuff. And then they rolled me into the room and they put the little oxygen thing on my face, and said, okay, roll on your side. And as I rolled on my side, the anesthesiologist took my hand with the thing in it and hooked it up. And she said, okay. And that's the last thing I remember. And then what felt like seconds later, I was awake. The doctor came in, told me what was up. And then, I got dressed and I left. And, you know, while there's probably 45 minutes of my life that I don't remember, very weirdly, like, I will say if there's anybody out there that's listening that needs to have a colonoscopy, really the worst part of it is the prep day. Everything else is like really easy. I mean, I don't know what your experience with colonoscopies are, but for me,
it's about the same.
Yeah. I mean, it is, you know, you're asleep and then you're awake and the doctor's there to talk to you while you're still groggy. And, you know, the doctor came in and talked to me. And then 10 minutes later, I turned to the nurse and I said, the doctor did come in, right? And she was like, yeah, we're going to write it all down for you. I was like, all right, good. Thanks. And then I said, I didn't ask for anything weird, did I? And she was like, no. And I said, because when I had a colonoscopy like 10 years ago, when I had like my diverticulitis first hit me, they did a colonoscopy And apparently I asked the doctor for HD resolution video of it that I don't remember asking for. And so I said that to the nurse, and she was like, no, you didn't say anything like that. I was like, all right, good. Thanks. But yeah, good times.
That's
funny. Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. No, I don't have to have another one for 10 years. So yippee.
Woohoo.
Yeah. What have you been watching recently?
Not a whole heck of a lot.
No. I mean, it is summer.
It is summer. There's not a lot on. Mm-mm. I've been left to my own devices.
Okay.
I think I am caught up with Poker Face.
Okay.
This one felt like the most Columbo-esque of any of them yet.
The one in the gym?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're kind of back to the idea of we're going to show you a murder and then how Charlie fits into it.
Right.
But yeah, and like the whole thing, like it felt very much like an episodic. Like in this season, it seemed like they had elevated the idea a little bit so that it wasn't as formulaic as most of these kinds of shows. And this one felt very formulaic of Charlie figures it out. She goes to confront the guy tries to kill her. She's got to figure out a way to get out of the situation. And then they get with the help of somebody else. She gets out and solves the case and gets the guy arrested or whatever.
Right.
Where it felt like the one before that with the rent control department in Awkwafina, felt very different. It felt very much like, it was more, not so much of a mystery as it was like putting the pieces together of how her friend died. So
right.
I don't know if it's different writers doing different takes on the genre or whatever, but they need to kind of go back and look at the ones that like were super successful. And if there's a season three, they need to really go in that direction. And also the idea of drinking breast milk to get muscle gains is kind of weird.
Yeah. And I didn't really see anything about the episode other than what was it called? One More Pump or something.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it takes place in a gym. Okay. So somebody's going to get killed in a gym. All right. The whole breast milk thing. I mean, I thought it was going to be steroids.
Yeah.
I thought the wife was stealing them from the clinic she worked at. And then it turned out to be breast milk.
Yeah. And the weird line that the dude that gets killed is a health inspector, and he makes the comment that he can smell breast milk from like, you know, I don't remember what the exact wording was, but the idea was like, I know the smell of breast milk from anywhere. And it's like, why?
Right.
Like, you're a health inspector. Wait a minute. Why are you smelling breast milk? So there is a couple of odd things in there. I mean, they can't all be winners, but I think, for the most part, you know, it's more about, Natasha's role in it is more than her, like the other actors. That actor, you know, that guy wasn't as great as like some of the other guest stars they've had. So
the guy who gave the health inspector.
Yeah.
That's John Ritter's son.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
Oh, whoops. I don't know if I've ever seen him in anything else though.
He's on the new Matlock. He's done a few things.
Okay.
He's serviceable.
Is he? Okay. Maybe it was just a bad.
Yeah, for the most part. He does these weird videos where he's like interpretive dancing. It's very bizarre.
Like just for fun?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, very weird.
Okay. I didn't realize that that was him.
Oh, apparently there is a website called Episodic Medium.
Okay.
In which the person who reviews Poker Face every week.
Yeah.
Also recommends a relevant Columbo episode.
Oh, okay.
So you should check out the season 4 classic An Exercise in Fatality with Robert Conrad.
Oh. Yeah, I'm looking at Jason Ritter's IMDb, and I don't think I've seen anything he's been in.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't watch a whole lot of like network TV. So if some of this is there,
he's in Gen V. Aren't you watching Gen V?
I've only watched a couple episodes of it.
Oh, well, I guess he's only in one.
Oh. Oh, he's married to Melanie Lynskey, who was in an episode a couple of episodes back.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Who's in Kevin Saves the World?
Mm-mm.
Kevin Probably Saves the World.
Mm-mm. Never saw it.
Never heard of it.
Nope.
He was in something called Bitch.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah, he's done a lot, but nothing of note.
Yeah, I mean, of all these things that I've, even the stuff that he has like multiple episodes in, I've never even heard of some of these. So, huh? Maybe I'm just, you know, behind the times on some of this.
I don't know. He's in Crapopolis.
I mean,
watch Crapopolis?
No, I never saw that. I've seen episodes of Gravity Falls, but I wouldn't know his voice, you know.
Oh, he was a clicker in The Last of Us.
Yeah, see, I wouldn't know that either. Especially with all that crap on his head.
Right. Yeah. Hmm.
Well, my apologies, Jason Ritter. I just didn't think it did very well.
Have you watched Ironheart?
I watched the first episode.
Okay. I watched the first three.
Yeah. From what I understand, the first three make an arc, I guess, which is why they released them all at the same time. Is it worth continuing on past the first one?
Episode three was much better than one and two.
Okay.
I don't hate it.
Okay.
But it's very much catering to a specific audience the way Ms. Marvel was.
Yes. Yeah, I mean,
and I don't know if that's helping the viewership or alienating the viewership.
Yeah, I mean, I see what they're doing. I understand like they're going to make this for like young Black women, which is fine. Mm-hmm. Like everybody needs representation. It's fine. But yeah, you're right. If they continue to use her, I don't know if they're going to have to widen the audience appeal. Because comic book things have mostly been young teenage boys. So
sure.
Not really sure how they'll work that out. But I mean, if you think it's a decent like run of three episodes, then I'm going to continue to watch it. I just haven't had time to go back to the other two.
I'd like to see what you think about it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I wholeheartedly support what they're doing.
Okay.
However, you can't totally, I mean, unless you're airing on a very specific TV network or cable channel.
Yeah.
You've got to find a way to embrace, not even embrace, to speak to everyone.
Yeah, you want, my personal thing is that they're trying to get the same audience that went to go see Black Panther.
Sure.
Made Black Panther a $1 billion franchise, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
Black people need representation in Marvel. You know, it was the right thing to do to make Sam Captain America over Bucky. Like,
right.
All that stuff works. All that stuff is great. But this is a show designed around a young black female, and it seems like it's meant for young black females. You know, I know I've seen the dude that plays the Hood in other things. And I don't ever remember being impressed by him. So they have kind of like a big hill to climb for me.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was digging the whole beginning where she gets kicked out of school. And so she takes the suit.
Right.
And, you know, she's going to take the suit and she's going to work on it. And I even really dug the whole thing of like when she crashes in Chicago and the dents in the ground spell out Ironheart, you know, as the title. Mm-hmm. I thought that was all cool. And then I was like, oh yeah, Ms. Marvel did that in the first episode too, that I thought was really cool that they never brought back for anything else. And now I'm like, oh, is that what this is going to be? And I know I'm not the demographic for this, just putting that out there. Like if it's for anybody, it's for my kid. And
sure.
Like she's 15. She's the right age. She likes Marvel. She likes strong female characters. So like, I'm going to base this around her too. And she liked the first episode. So I was like, cool. Like, this obviously is not meant to talk to me, and that's mm-hmm. fine. Like it's not my Marvel anymore. You know, it's not the comic books of old.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think the problem I have with it is that the Marvel universe is so vast, and there's like this map that they have that things from a movie 10 years ago suddenly pays off.
Yeah.
And it's like, how are you going to do that when you're bringing in, and not that like every series should be a blockbuster, you know, you're not going to have something that's going to last for, you know, 9-10 seasons. That's fine.
Right.
But there's going to be a lot, you know, when Riri shows up in, you know, one of the new movies, people are, who's that?
Yeah.
Because there's, I don't know. I mean, it's only been 3 episodes. So let's watch and see.
So after we watched the first episode, my kid turned to me and she was like, didn't she have a suit at the end of Black Panther 2? And I said, yeah, but I'm pretty sure the Wakandans kept it as a way, you know, so that she can build her own in the show, so that when she shows up in Young Avengers or whatever they're going to do with her, she's got her own suit and her own tech, and it's not going to be beholden on the Wakandans to outfit all of the new Avengers. Because have you seen the new Captain America film now that it's streaming on Disney Plus?
Yes.
Okay. So the whole conceit with Sam not taking the super soldier serum was the fact that his outfits are now given to him by Wakanda. And they have all the special tech in it that makes them faster and stronger and whatever. And it's like, well, they can't do that for every superhero now. Like, it can't be the Wakandan supplied Avengers. Like, they need to like reel it in and like figure out other ways for people to get tech and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I guess I can't really judge it until I've seen the other two, but you know.
Yeah.
It is nice. At least there's something new on Disney Plus to watch.
There's nothing new on any of the streaming services.
Yeah.
I have found myself going back to reruns of Moonlighting. And it still stands up for me. I mean, it's got some great writing. Yeah. And it goes from the kind of Murder, She Wrote, Crime of the Week to completely absurd. I just watched a Christmas episode where Richard Belzer breaks into a informant's relocation house in vengeance for testifying against him. And his wife is able to sneak out with the baby, and the baby ends up with Elise Beasley, who was the secretary for Sybil Shepherd's detective agency. And it was this really bizarre, funny episode. And I don't know how to describe it. It's like at one point they go and they meet a lawyer whose name is King. And he takes him to their office and introduces his co-partners, who are also named King.
Okay.
And it's, oh, the three Kings that Bruce Willis throws out. And Bruce Willis talks to the camera. It's like they go into somebody's office or barge into somebody's office. And they're like, you can't be here. And Bruce Willis goes, well, tell it to the writers.
Oh, geez.
And I mean, I don't know if that was his first acting job, but it's very interesting to see that versus the superhero that he's become.
Yeah.
Or not the superhero, but
the action star.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he did some comedies for a while, and then I just don't
think... And he had a recording career.
Yeah, I just don't think that he found the comedies as fulfilling, probably money-wise, as you know, later on, you know, they're paying him $20 million per picture for action films and a lot less for, like, comedies and stuff, so he shied away from the comedy stuff. You know, it's the same thing with Tom Hanks. Like, Tom Hanks switched over to a dramatic actor and realized, oh, there's a lot more money in this. So we'll just do these kinds of roles from now on.
Bruce Willis's first acting gig was Man Entering Diner as Delaney Leaves, uncredited, 1980.
In what show?
The First Deadly Sin. Maybe it's a movie. Oh, Blind Date came before Moonlighting. I didn't realize that.
Oh, wow.
Die Hard came before Moonlighting.
Wait, I thought he got the job in Die Hard because of Moonlighting.
Oh, no. Moonlighting was 85 to 89. Die Hard was 88. So, yeah, that's probably right. But why is it put there instead of
IMDb puts shit in weird spots.
Hmm.
It's like the last year that it's on is where it ends up in the list instead of the first year it was on, which is probably where it should be.
Yeah.
I was on Miami Vice. Everybody was on Miami Vice in the 80s, so.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think Moonlighting opened up everything for him in a big bad way. I think, you know, they saw him on Moonlighting and was like, oh, let's try him in regular motion pictures. And, you know, you get Blind Date. Right. And I mean, he doesn't have too many things in between when he's doing Moonlighting. You know, he does Blind Date and then The Return of Bruno, which was a TV movie. and then something called Sunset before he gets to Die Hard. I wonder if Hudson Hawk was the point at which he was like, yeah, I'm not doing comedies anymore. Because it looks that way. It looks like he starts with, I mean, there are one-offs where like he's on an episode of like Mad About You.
Right.
And stuff like that. But like movie roles are, becomes very serious after Hudson Hawk.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if the failure of Hudson Hawk was him being like, yeah, we're just going to do these serious pictures. I mean, even though there's things, there are movies that he did that have like comedy in them, but like not straight up comedies. Although, where do you rate The Whole Nine Yards? Was The Whole Nine Yards a comedy? With Matthew Perry?
Was that a remake? The plot seems awful familiar to me based on a Steve Martin, Rick Moranis movie called My Blue Heaven.
Yeah. I don't know which one of them came first. I mean, maybe he tried to do a comedy again with Matthew Perry and was like, oh, these suck.
Don't know.
What happened? Are you okay?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, IMDb has The Whole Nine Yards as a dark comedy, so.
Okay.
Maybe that's what they were trying for.
Whatever.
Yeah. I mean,
Hudson Hawk had Sandra Bernhard.
I mean, it must be a comedy because Harlan Williams and Kevin Pollak are in it.
Oh, of course.
Weird. I mean, and then there's the thing where I guess he realized that he had a problem with his health, so he starts doing anything that they'll pay him $1 million for, I guess was the deal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he just starts making shit that nobody's ever heard of. I mean, if you look at the last third of his IMDb, it's like, what the hell? But I mean, I guess if you could get Bruce Willis in your movie.
Sure.
You know. I mean, he goes from, let's see, what do I think is his last major? Let's say Glass in 2019 is his last like major film. Like mainstream film. And that's got a 6.6 in IMDb. And then in 2019, he does like 10 minutes Gone. And that's 3.7 stars out of, what is it, 10? And then it's a 4, and it's 4, 3.1, 2.9, 2.5, 4.6. Like, just horribly reviewed movies. But he didn't give a fuck because he was making $1 million a movie. I mean, I honestly don't know if I've seen any of these films. He did a movie in 2022 called Corrective Measures, which is about a prison full of supervillains.
Ooh.
It's him, Michael Rooker, Tom Cavanaugh from The Flash. Doug Bradley, who used to be Pinhead in the Hellraiser series. Yeah. Must not have been a great film.
No?
No. I mean, and it's weird because Bruce Willis isn't even listed on like the first page of actors. He's the very last person, so his role is probably like super minor. But they had Bruce Willis, so they put him on the poster.
Of course.
Yeah.
Did you see that classic with John Travolta, Paradise City?
No.
No? Okay. No,
can't say I did.
Steven Dorff was in it.
Take Me Down to the Paradise City. Where the grass is green and the girls are pretty.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Not too long ago, I did watch a John Travolta movie that I hadn't seen before that I really liked.
Really?
I gotta remember what it was called. Let me look at his IMDb. It is called From Paris with Love, 2010. Okay. It's him and Jonathan Rhys-Meyers. It's
okay.
It's all set in Paris, and John Travolta plays like a government hired. I don't know what they're called. They're not. Mercenary. That's the word I'm looking for. And Jonathan Rhys-Meyers plays this guy that is working for an ambassador, and he's like in over his head with something, and John Travolta shows up. Like, John Travolta in it was really charismatic and fun. And I was like, holy shit, okay. And you know, it's the bald John Travolta with the big goatee, and like he's got this huge earring in his ear. It's actually a fun movie for what it is. I mean, it's not rated very highly, but like for a fun popcorn shoot 'em up movie, it wasn't bad. And I think it's on Prime Video. So like, you know, it's a free watch, I guess, for like an hour and a half.
Huh.
I mean, it's not like stellar acting or anything, but it's, you know, it's fun. It's a popcorn.
Travolta is the only American in the cast.
Yeah, I believe that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I'll check that out.
Yeah. So this week I decided that, I don't know where the idea came from, but I wanted to 3D print a Nautilus from 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Okay.
And I found a decent model. And while I was printing it, I decided I haven't seen 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea probably since I was a kid.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it was one of those movies that they showed on like Sunday nights on ABC during like The Wonderful World of Disney or whatever that was.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen it since. And I was like, it's gotta be on Disney Plus. And lo and behold, it's on Disney Plus. So I went back and I watched 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea as if I had never seen it before. And
okay,
for a 1954 film, the effects are strangely really well done. You know, my one critique is that Kirk Douglas is really hammy and over the top, but I think that's what they were going for.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed it as an adult after having not seen it for, you know, 40 years, 35 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's got Kirk Douglas, Peter Lorre's in it. James Mason plays Captain Nemo.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a whole lot of, like, they built a full-size Nautilus exterior, I guess, for the top parts. And it's obviously in a tank, which is fine. Like, it's 1954. They're not going to put it out to the sea. But they do a whole bunch of, like, there's a whole bunch of, like, rear screen projection in it that I didn't remember. There's a whole bunch of, like, things that, like, you'd see now and you'd be like, oh, okay, that's cool. They're doing it this way. That just works for 1954. Like, it really does. So I was, there's a whole bunch of, like, underwater scenes where people are walking around in these,
mm-hmm.
you know, these diving suits that look like they're handmade. And to have the forethought of, like, getting it all to work and then, you know, dressing it all up so that it looks that way. Like, most of the time in 1954, they would have found diving suits. And they would have just put them in diving suits under the water and filmed it that way. Mm-hmm. And even the giant squid looks fucking amazing for the time.
Yeah.
Like, it's really well done. So if you've never seen 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, you probably should.
Well, since we're talking about Disney movies.
Yeah.
I watched one of Disney's worst movies.
Song of the South?
Just on a whim.
Song of the South?
No.
Oh.
The Devil and Max Devlin. Ever heard of it?
No.
It starred Elliot Gould and Bill Cosby as the devil.
Oh, my.
And Elliot Gould gets approached by the devil and is told, if you can get me three souls, then, you know, I'm not going to take you to hell. And you've got to get them to sign this contract so that I, you know, I get their souls. And it's a young girl who's a singer. It's a little boy played by Adam Rich, who's trying to get someone for his single mother. And it is a wannabe motocross guy whose character name is Nerve Nordlinger.
Okay.
And throughout the whole thing, Elliot Gould is trying to, you know, help these three people get their wishes, and you know, they eventually sign a contract for them, and then Bill Cosby in full devil outfit explains to him that it's like, well, now that you've gotten them to sign these, they're all going to die at midnight and you're free and you'll live out your, you know, your days as they were expected to be.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, it's, parts of it seem to be like a bad Chips episode. Apparently the only reason Bill Cosby took it, because they've been trying to get him to do a movie for Disney. And he had heard that Disney wasn't very, woke, I guess.
Okay.
Like, wasn't very kind to black people.
Okay.
Apparently he hadn't seen Song of the South. So he did it because in the past the devil had always been a white guy.
Huh. Okay.
But it's, yeah. I don't know how else to describe it. It was 1981.
I'm looking at a picture of Bill Cosby as the devil, and that is some getup.
The where he's all painted red?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I have never heard of this movie at all.
There's good reason for that.
Is this one of the ones that Disney tried to bury?
It was one of the ones that made Disney start Touchstone.
Oh.
Because okay. It wasn't really your typical feel-good family movie. I mean, in the end, Elliot Gould sabotages the devil. He burns all the contracts and everybody is kind of, you know, released back to their lives. And everything that they had accomplished that he thought was through him and the devil, they'd actually really done on their own.
And it's not on Disney Plus. That's interesting.
Oh, I wouldn't expect it to be.
I thought their entire back catalog was on there, though. Where did you watch it?
I think it was, let's see, was it? Ooh, lightning. There is a website called Rare Filmum. It's Rare Film with two M's.
Okay.
And there's a lot of unavailable stuff on there.
Okay. The Cave of Forgotten Films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some weird stuff from TV.
There was a remake of Streetcar Named Desire in 1984?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Is that the one with Anne Margaret?
Oh, I don't know. It was the first thing that popped up.
Oh. No, it's Treat Williams. Oh, it is Anne Margaret. Treat Williams, Anne Margaret, and Beverly D'Angelo. It was a TV movie.
Oh, okay.
Also starring Randy Quaid. Yeah, a very interesting website.
Wow, this has got a ton.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy that like they found links to all
of this. There's a lot of foreign stuff, too.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. There's a documentary from 1991 called Broken Meat. That a trip along the seamy edges of New York City and the voyage through the consciousness of a mad beat poet, Alan Granville. It's a 50-minute documentary in black and white. Good God.
Yeah.
Wow, this is something else.
Yeah.
And is this where you found that movie?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, I feel like most movies probably between like 1940 and 1980 kind of get lost in the shuffle of like the big things that get remembered.
Right.
You know, I'm not surprised there's this many that are like, I mean, there's ones on here that say that they were Academy Award nominees. I mean, and those are kind of lost to time.
Mm-hmm.
You can watch The Love Boat, A Valentine Voyage.
Ooh, one of my favorites.
From 1990.
That Lauren Twees. Very underestimated actress.
So it's got Tom Bosley, Julia Duffy, Roddy Piper, Shanna Reed, Ted Shackelford, and Jerry Lacey, whoever Jerry Lacey is. So there's like a bunch of TV movies on here too. That's interesting.
Yeah, and there's some theater stuff. There's animation. Huh. You can browse by decade.
Wow, this is cool.
Have you watched the new Snow White?
No, I haven't. Nobody in the house wants to even give it a try. Have you?
It's not horrible.
Okay.
There's a ton of new songs in it.
Yeah.
Probably the weakest thing is Gal Gadot. Gal Gadot.
Well, that goes without saying.
And I don't know if she's using her real voice.
Okay.
But she's got a very bizarre accent.
Yeah.
And she has two musical numbers.
Oh, Jesus.
Because people, you know, were screaming to hear her sing. It's the dwarves are not bad.
Okay.
They look like realistic versions of the Disney dwarves. A lot of the imagery is straight out of the animated film. There's no prince in this one. There's like a guy.
Okay.
Like some random guy that she keeps running into.
Okay.
But I mean, some of it is really beautiful.
So,
and some of it is just kind of like, why? Like at the end, she goes back to her castle where the queen has taken over, and confronts her.
Okay.
And it's just a very bizarre scene. It's like they're in front of the castle. The queen comes out the drawbridge, and there's, you know, her knights, and then there's a bunch of the town folk, and Snow White's talking to the knight or the guards, and telling, it's like, well, I remember you. It's like, you know, you used to be a farmer, and you had an apple orchard, and every year for harvest, you'd invite everybody from the town to come and pick apples for themselves. And kind of like wins over all the guards again.
Yeah.
And then the queen is kind of like outnumbered. And it's like a Spartacus moment where they're going, I remember, I remember, I remember.
So is it the thing? Does she eat the poison apple and fall like into whatever?
Oh, yeah.
And if there's no.
If
there's no Prince Charming, who kisses her? Or is that
the guy?
Oh, just the guy?
The random guy.
Okay.
Yeah. The random guy. I mean, Rachel Zegler's not horrible.
Okay. So do you think that she's been unfairly maligned for...
I don't know, because I don't... She must... I don't know. I don't get the fascination with her. So okay. It's like she went from West Side Story to Snow White to Evita in London. And apparently she's going to be doing The Sound of Music in New York. It's like, huh? Where did she come from?
Well, I think it's that her first, you know, her first gig was in a Spielberg film. So I'm sure like they figured if he's hiring her, that she must be something.
Yeah, I guess. Kind of odd, but not horrible.
Okay.
I mean, I wish they were able to come up with original ideas these days, but apparently not, because we're going to get Stitch live action 2 already.
I know, because I guess the first one did well. I don't know.
I guess. Or it sold enough merchandise.
Yeah. I just saw that Mel Brooks just turned 99.
Uh-huh.
And I gotta imagine they're filming his part for Spaceballs 2 soon, right? They've gotta be like putting him in front of a blue screen or something made up.
Yep.
Very quickly. Like he's gotta be the first thing they shoot. Like I can't imagine. I wouldn't even be surprised if they shot, you know, his announcement for Spaceballs 2, like, while they were filming his stuff. You know, because they've got to be further along than what you know them to be. So I would assume that, like, anything that has to do with yogurt is done or being close to being shot or whatever.
Right.
I mean, I do hope that like this is a good movie. I hope that they're able to recapture that magic.
Mm-hmm. I hope it's not Beetlejuice.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Well, History of the World, when they did it as a series, wasn't bad.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was funny. It captured a lot of the old stuff because most of those people are dead. Harvey Korman and B. Arthur, Madeline Kahn.
Yeah.
But I think they did a good job with it.
I mean, what did you think about the reboot of the producer's movie?
It's really hard to take something that is a classic.
Yeah.
And then try to make it relevant again. And the fact that they basically had the Broadway cast with the exception of Uma Thurman. I don't know. I mean for a movie version of a Broadway musical, it was fine. But okay. There's nothing that can compete with the original movie with Zero Mostel and Kenneth Mars and you know, all those people.
Yeah.
You know, same thing with like turning Young Frankenstein into a musical. Like you can't. Those actors are so indelibly engraved in people's memory.
Yeah, but I think, like you said, there are no new ideas anymore. So they look at movies and they're like, hey, let's turn Death Becomes Her into a Broadway show.
Sure.
You know, and they try that for a while, and whether that works or not, then they move on to the next IP and they're like, all right, let's try this.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, I think Death Becomes Her has the distinction of generating a meme out of it that made people seek out what the meme was from. So they probably got more eyes on it than they probably would have. than like, oh, this is from a movie from like the late 90s or whenever that came out. That was the early 90s, actually, right? I think I was still working in the movie theater when that came out. So, yeah.
Well, if we're remaking old movies, I think it's time for a reboot of The Last Dragon.
No, don't touch The Last Dragon. It doesn't work. It wouldn't work in today's environment. That's one of those movies that needs to live where it is in the time that it is. And just be recognized for the cultural giant touchstone that it was. With Bruce Leroy, Shonuff, the weird fight inside the video studio, you know, all of that stuff. The glow. Like, The Last Dragon is a movie that would suffer from the idea of people carrying around cell phones. Like, that would completely derail the plot of the film. So let's just leave it where it is.
All right.
Move your pizzas to Papa Green's Pizzas.
Yes.
Somebody would try to remake The Last Dragon song and it would just fall flat.
Is Vanity still alive? Maybe she could be in it and play her mother, you know, the mother of the new ingenue.
Didn't she die of an overdose or something?
Vanity?
Yeah.
Really? Possible.
She died in 2016.
Oh, at 57.
Yeah.
Overdosed on crack.
Yep, that's okay.
Crack is whack. Said it before.
I mean, she was hot in that movie, for sure.
Yeah.
Definitely attractive woman. Just, you know. You cannot remake The Last Dragon. Sorry. I put my foot down.
All right.
Because how would you explain the glow now? Because you know you couldn't just put it into the current timeline where all of a sudden this guy can like move enough to where he glows. Like, I don't know how you would do that. Man, Shonuff is dead. Bruce Leroy still alive? Yeah, okay. Bruce Leroy is still alive. We know Faith Prince is still alive.
Yeah.
Is Daddy Green still alive? Oh, it doesn't say. Ernie Reyes Jr. still alive. I mean, they could do a subset, but they can't remake it.
They could revisit it. They could have cameos by the people who are still alive, but they could redo it for the new age. I think it'll work.
It's an older Bruce Leroy. He's defeated all of his enemies. And now he has to train the next Last Dragon.
Oh, isn't that Cobra Kai, the movie?
No, I guess they've already done that, huh?
I think they need to make a kung fu movie that encompasses all kung fu movies.
Wasn't that...
And includes Hong Kong Fooey.
Wasn't that... what was that movie? Kung Fury? It was the satire.
Kung Pao?
Kung Pao. It was a Kung Pao. Yeah. Didn't that's kind of what that is, right? Isn't that like where they like?
Is it? I don't know. I don't go to those movies.
Why not?
I don't know.
There was also a 2015 movie called Kung Fury. And it's like it's a 31-minute like short that's got like David Sandberg in it.
Okay.
And I think they just David Hasselhoff is in it. Not that that's a big get, but they have to fight the Kung Fuhrer, which is Adolf Hitler.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. 2015 was a weird time, my friends.
I guess so.
Yeah. And I could have sworn there was like a, there is a Kung Fury 2. And it's got Arnold Schwarzenegger in it. And Michael Fassbender.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yep, and it's got Adolf Hitler in it.
Woohoo.
Yeah. So see, anybody can make a movie.
Nazis. I hate those guys.
That's funny.
What about a remake of Willow where like... Like all of the tall actors are little people and Willow's like the normal size person.
Sure. Instead of Mad Mardigan, it's Mini Mardigan.
There you go.
But, you know, think of how upset Warwick Davis would be that you're taking away that role from him.
His one role?
Yeah.
Oh, they're making more Star Wars movies. They'll cast him in something.
Well, now that he's an honorary BAFTA winner.
Yeah. That's nice.
Sure. I think you remake Willow, but there are no little people in it. It's a regular sized dude that, you know, can actually fight.
Thinks he's little?
No, not even that. Just, you know, the Nilwyn are regular sized people. They're just kind of like the Hicks of the world. He's, you know, he's a little backwards.
You know what? No, I got it. I got it.
Okay.
It's a vehicle for Willow Smith. She's the only black person in the movie.
Okay.
I mean, genius. Come on.
Okay.
Be amazing.
But it's all set in like modern day, like a modern day cityscape.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not like fantasy now. It's it's just a.
Well, it could be like The Wiz.
Ooh, there you go. The African American version of Willow.
There you go. See.
Yeah. Is that too DEI? Will we get in trouble for that?
I don't know. Not if you convince Will Smith to bankroll it. Because it'll help his career now after he like slapped Chris Rock.
And like The Wiz, well, I mean, The Wizard of Oz was a musical too, but like you make Willow, the new Willow, a musical. There's a big dance number, the end fight scene.
To the tune of I Whip My Hair?
Yeah. They don't even need to re-record it.
Right.
It's perfect. Get your friends on that. You know people.
All right. I'll call Warwick.
You're connected. No, you can't call Warwick because we're taking that away from him.
Oh, okay.
You got to get in touch with Will Smith.
Do I have to?
Yes. Hey, this was your idea, pal, that we make it about Willow Smith. So, I mean, they've already remade The Karate Kid with Jaden. So,
right.
You know, Willow's got to have something to do. I mean, that way it'll wash the bad taste out of people's mouths of the Willow TV show that you can't watch anywhere anymore. So get on that. That's your homework.
Okay. Yes, sir.
All right. Well, do you have anything else for this week?
Oh, no, I think that's enough.
All right. Well, if you want to get in touch with us, you can always send us an email at info@dancemonkeypodcast.com. You can follow us on Facebook and YouTube and let us know you're listening. So until next week, this is Chris.
This is John.
Have a good week.
Hasta lumbago. Sayonara. Catch you on the flip-flop.